Don't get boxed in by a whiteboarding app with limited functionality. Try Lucid, the visual collaboration platform that covers your team's entire spectrum of work. With Lucid, you can host virtual brainstorms and so much more. Diagram important processes, conduct cross-functional planning on an infinite visual canvas, power your workflows with data and intelligent automation, and bring your best ideas to life. Try Lucid for free at lucid.co/Spotify.
Deep in the heart of Appalachia, guys set out on a quest to create the greatest podcast.
Sorry, dude. I thought we agreed on the correct pronunciation of Appalachia.
No, dude. We've talked about this. We've talked about this over and over and over. It's pronounced Appalachia.
Listen, freaking angels and the women got together. That's how we got Bigfoot. That's how we got vampires. That's why we got all this stuff.
These ancient Appalachian mountains that are literally older than bones. There's old entities here. When you start finding out more about them, they start finding out more about you.
Good Lord, sir. This goose has gone rabid. And you think you're just going to run up with your little sword on the king of the goose squad?
Listen, the old entities of Middle Appalachia are unexplainable. They are eerie.
Breach.
And they are one of these things that will keep us, the hill folks, and the people who live in the area, constantly searching for answers that they probably will never ever find. And this is why we love Appalachian Intelligence.
Hey there, hill folk. And welcome back to another episode of Appalachian Intelligence. We're extremely thankful that you guys are here to join us again for another week, for another edition of AI. It's me and the boys here tonight. You got Justin, Ryan, and Lance with you. We were scheduled to have a guest on for the night, but due to some technical difficulties, some things not working out, it's just got us. So I hope that's not too terrible for you guys, for you hill folk.
We'll do our best.
We'll do our best. We definitely won't have the charm and the knowledge of Josh and Richie last week. Again, we want to thank those guys, the guys from Sword and Staff podcast coming on here. You guys go check out their podcast. Go check out Shadow Appalachia. Big things are in the works with all of that. So stay tuned. Keep up with it. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. But as usual, you know, when we get love, we like to show a little love back. So we're going to read our, well, not most recent 5-star review, because we're getting quite a few of them, which is great news. But we're going to read the next one in line. So this one said, or this is from Ollie2. It says, A+ Mad Dogs, 5 stars. Great show. Love the banter between presenters. Came from the cult of Hollow Sky. Stayed for the Major Payne references. Keep it up, fellas. And business will be good. So, Ollie, too, we appreciate nice. That. We appreciate that. Nothing. I mean, Major Payne references just make everything better. I don't care what you're talking about.
Hold on a bit.
Any of the 90s classics, you're going to hear a lot of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what, you know, that's what we need to start doing on here. We need to have like a 90s theme going forward.
And listen, Justin and I, of course, you guys know, grew up together. 95% of our conversation was always some sort of cheesy movie quote, just kind of what we lived on.
Well, that's kind of the guy thing, you know, like, chicks sit around and, you know, they actually talk, you know, they open up about feelings and emotions and talk about events and things that are going on and their plans and their dreams and their aspirations and what's going on in their lives and how hard this is. And like, they actually talk.
And dudes, we just try to hit each other in the balls and have mood quotes.
That's yeah. It. That's it. A circle of guys. That's what you do. If somebody starts trying to share feelings, that's it. You hit them with a quick movie quote, and don't talk to me about that anymore.
Yeah. Don't you ever say that.
I don't want to see you in that light again. But no, guys, that is a good idea, though. We should go with a 90s theme. That's we'll remember that going forward. Yeah. So, again, we were supposed to have a guest for tonight. Wasn't able to work out. So, I mean, you know, obviously we have a whole lot of ammunition laying around that we could always go to, but we're kind of shooting from the hip with this one tonight. We're kind of shooting from the hip, but what better way to have great conversation than just actually having great conversation? So something that I have been looking into for a while, because due to my daughter's medical condition, she sees doctors at UVA in Charlottesville. And so we spend a lot of time there, and there's a location out there that I had heard maybe from an episode of Weird Darkness, Darren Marlar.
Yeah.
Talking about the Dunlora Plantation. Now, this Dunlora Plantation, a lot of it is mystery. You know, we're talking events that happened around 100 years ago, but it involves a witch. It involves some murdered Boy Scouts. It involves nobody knowing where to point the finger and a whole lot of history behind it. So one of the best articles, and you know, everything we do, like unless you just sit down and take your own notes and do it, and I ain't doing all that. I ain't got time for that. So I found a pretty good article that covers a lot of the information on Mysterious Universe, which I love. You know, you guys go check them out too. I actually think they got their own podcast as well. So y'all go check that out. But yeah, we're going to dive into the Dunlora Plantation and the witch and some bad happenings to some Boy Scouts. How you fellas feel about this topic?
Well, as I said before we started, I know nothing about this, so I'll let you know as we go. It sounds kind of churched up, like, you know, it's already bad enough they're killing children, but, oh my God, Boy Scouts.
Well, I don't think...
That murderous hag.
I don't think groups of a whole lot of children just go out and camp out for the night unless you're in some kind of, you know, like scouts or...
No, Scoutmaster, I will not stay in your tent tonight.
I don't want to talk about it.
Probably uncalled for.
Good thing Protestant camp don't run like that, Ryan.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, really? Probably can't be been too bad.
We'll lay hands on you, and I'll pray later.
All right. So let's just dive on into it.
Let's go.
And before you, is Deloria, D-E-L-O-R-A, Deloria, what you're saying?
Dunlora.
Dunlora.
D-U-N-L-O-R-A. Dunlora. Gotcha. Yep.
Lord, Lance.
Keep up, Lance. Keep up.
Just for some fact check later on.
Hey, get it, son. Get it. Enhance.
There,
Lance.
There you go.
Lance, enhance. Lying out in the dim woods near Charlottesville, Virginia, at the end of a meandering dirt road winding under arches of ancient-looking gnarled trees is a stately old house that is one of the oldest in the area. The land was originally acquired in 1724 by Major Thomas Carr, better known as the brother-in-law of Thomas Jefferson himself, for unspecified services to the crown, after which the sprawling house called Dunlora Mansion, more a large farmhouse really, was erected in 1730. After that, the history seems to have been pretty mundane, just another rich person's plantation estate. But perhaps because of its location tucked away in a deep forest in the 1900s, it began to accrue some interesting legends about it and has earned itself a reputation as a witch's den full of ghosts, madness, and murder. It was around this time the stories say that the Dunlora Mansion apparently was owned by a reclusive woman who, rumor had it, was a nefarious witch. The area, which had been a popular site for camping in earlier times, gradually became a place to be avoided by around 1920, and there were numerous tales of people seeing strange things in the woods near the mansion. Shadow figures, strange rituals, mystery lights, these are just some of the oddities people reported seeing through the trees, and when the old woman died, it apparently only got worse. Her ghost supposedly roaming the area and vehemently chasing trespassers away. Adding to these spooky legends was the persistent claim that there was a weed-choked, overgrown graveyard nearby, hidden amongst the trees that had been the final resting place of the previous owner's slaves. By far the most pervasive scary story attributed to Dunlora Mansion is that of a group of people who perhaps got a little closer than the legendary witch wanted. This apparently happened in the summer of 1920, when a group of six Boy Scouts and their scout leader were in the area on a camping excursion. They had not really been acquainted with all the spooky lore surrounding the eerie place and perhaps foolishly chose to set up their campsite right within the notorious forlorn property of Dunlora Mansion. At first, things were pretty normal, the group enjoying dinner and a quiet night while sitting around their campfire telling stories, but according to the tale, it was the last thing they would ever do. It was the middle of the night when the scout leader was awoken by some sort of scratching sounds and what almost sounded like a grumbling noise coming from the vicinity of the boys' tents. Thinking that it was maybe some wild animal prowling about or just the kids messing around, he got up, grabbed his flashlight, and went out in the night to see what it was and to chase it off or to admonish his charges. When he got to the tents, there was no sign of any animal, and indeed, there was no sign of the boys either. The tents were empty, the flaps fluttering and rustling in the slight breeze, and all around there was a crushing quiet calm. His calls to them answered with silence. The stabs of light from his flashlight illuminated only the trees, nothing more. But at this point, he was not yet scared as he figured they had wandered off to explore or were just pulling a practical joke. When he stalked off into the woods to find them, he wasn't really truly frightened yet, but he would be. After some time of stumbling through the brush and trees, futilely calling out to the boys and not finding any sign of them, he purportedly noticed a light flickering off in the distance through the murk of night. Not knowing if it was perhaps the flashlight of the boys, he crept towards it and soon found that the light was set within the looming shadow of an old decrepit house. Feral and rotting away, squatted there in the forest. He had found Dunlora Mansion, and trapped behind one of its cracked windows was this one dancing light as if cast by a candle, feeble yet defying the wind. It seemed as if the boys might have gone within its dusty walls to explore, but there was no response to their names being shouted repeatedly. In fact, nobody seemed to be home at all despite that maddening glimmering candlelight that stood defiantly in that window. He went to knock on the door, only for it to go creaking open, totally unlocked and seemingly not having been locked in decades. He went inside. The interior was every bit as unkempt and deteriorated as the outside, moldy furniture scattered about, a thick layer of grime upon the floor, and a film of dust frosting everything, and it seemed as if it had not been lived in for some time. He did a search of the filthy old abandoned house, and it was not until he was about to leave to go to continue looking in the woods that he apparently heard what sounded like a child's voice coming from somewhere in the bowels of the house's cellar. Having apparently never seen a horror movie before, the scout leader went right down those rickety, rotted out stairs to find himself in a wide open cinder block room draped in blackened shadows that almost seemed to cling to everything in there, only sluggishly banished by the flashlight. According to the version of the story, he found either nothing or a single Boy Scout hat on the floor, but every version agrees on what happened next. As he waved his light about, trying to push back the stubborn veil of shadows, the beam apparently came about to cast upon the ancient-looking face of an old woman standing there in that room with him. And what made it even worse was that she had an insane smile plastered upon her face, yellow teeth sharpened into points. Was this the owner of the house or something else? The scout leader, very unsettled by this point, did not wait to find out. Instead, bolting right back up those stairs to go careening out back into that forbidding forest, regurgitated by the ominous house into the gloomy trees. According to the story, he then tripped over something in his path, his foot hitting it with a wet thud. It was no log or tree stump, but rather one of his missing Boy Scouts, lying there upon a mix of mud and blood. The stomach opened up like a zipper to reveal the entrails underneath. As the scout leader gasped in horror, his beam illuminated a row of bodies, the other scouts all lined up and similarly disemboweled. The police would purportedly find the scout leader the next day, lying half conscious on the side of the road in a shocked stupor. And when they went to the campsite, it turned out that all of the boys were back in their tents, yet just as dead as they had been the previous evening. Some of their organs roasting over a dying campfire. The scout leader babbled on about what had happened, but this was met with raised eyebrows and did not keep him from being arrested for murder and eventually committed to an insane asylum. In the meantime, it is said that seven old, twisted trees would suddenly spring up in the area, practically overnight, where none had been before, supposedly conjured up to house the spirits of the dead scouts and the sanity of their leader. It is interesting that in more modern times, the surrounding area has been somewhat developed into an upscale private residential district. It is mostly quiet, except for the myriad seekers of macabre curiosity who come snooping around hoping to see something supernatural, and a few have succeeded. Coming away with tales of seeing the ghosts of the boys or even the witch herself, in one account posted on the site Saturn's Moons, the witness says that he and some friends went to investigate the area, and he explains, "It's fairly easy to find the road you need. Dunlora is mostly known for being a rich neighborhood, but while you're driving along the main road in the subdivision, there will be a road that clearly does not belong. It's a gravelly dirt road. I already had a sense of foreboding when we turned onto the road. As we continued our drive down the road, I spied a wispy, translucent something at the top left of my windshield. It couldn't have been a tree branch because the majority of the trees are bare. Plus, the last I checked, trees don't grow wispy objects. We eventually made it fairly far back when we came across two stone pillars on either side of the road ahead of us. Beyond these pillars was absolute darkness. Immediately, we all had a reaction of something not wanting us to be there. We all had this strong feeling at the same time. I immediately turned the truck around and we got the hell out of there. I wish we had gotten pictures, but at that moment, we all just wanted to leave. One of the girls with me has friends who previously explored the area, and they had the same feelings about the place that we did. On Tuesday evening, we will be returning with a posse of people to explore. I don't normally get this way about places. My legs were shaking during the drive away from there. Whatever it could have possibly been didn't follow us because that feeling left after we got off that road. A part of me thinks that it was all in our imagination, and there are rational explanations for everything, while the other part of me knows there was something there that didn't want us there.
So he could listen to that rational explanation too.
Well, yeah, he could. I mean, you know, it's easy to go into a place and think, already have a preconceived idea of this place, what happened and the events that took place, and it's super haunted, and you already psych yourself out by the time you get there.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a witch, too, so that's just the worst.
Yeah. Like you said before, like you begin to see what you look for, right? You have these ideas of grandeur, the possibilities already there. Any little things, you're going to be kind of heightened to seeing or experiencing more.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, regardless of all that, if the history and this was just one of the best articles or accounts of all of it that I could find, but I've saw the story written up on several different sites, in a couple different books. that I found that it was published in, and the story is the same every single time. But I think what's interesting about the whole account, and it's something that we've talked to, or something that we've talked about on here quite a few times up to this point, you know, was this a place that legitimately was being haunted or still controlled by the spirit of this witch, or, you know, some entities portraying to be this witch, or was it a scout leader that just lost it one night, murdered all of his entire troop of Boy Scouts, made up this entire story to back along, you know, or to go along with it and back up his claim? Or the third option, was there something there that possessed him to do these things to these kids?
I don't know.
That's a good, all those are good questions. You could start an argument with Ryan and I right now by me saying, I think that the scout leader probably did all these things and concocted this story, but yet he was being influenced by an evil entity. And then Ryan's going to counter with, no, he's just had a mental, if we're going to say that, and he's had a mental break. And he spent an hour discussing the difference between mental breaks and like we did one other night. But just first time I've ever heard the entirety of the story, right? And I'm just kind of sitting back and taking it all in. And my initial thought was scout leader. It just kind of feels like one of those things. Okay. But then you get the other hauntings, right? That are there, have been documented, so on and so forth. That's where I always say, or that makes me kind of believe or lean to that, yes, definitely scout leader, but probably influenced by an evil entity that maybe caused him to do these things. That's my, just again, face value, just hearing the story for the first time in its entirety. That's kind of the feeling I got from it.
Ryan, what are you thinking?
No, I agreed with Lance. I thought it was the scout leader. I just thought, you know, he snapped and was already crazy.
Get all these kids.
What year did you say that happened?
1920.
Yeah, so I'm sure they weren't vetting the scout leaders at that point in time.
No.
Maybe he was a diddler and just couldn't live with what he did and knew he was going to get caught.
I mean, I also kind of had a thought just because of talking, and now not every scout leader is diddling.
No, we're not
making that generalization, but I did have the thought, like, you know, just there's been a lot that's come out, right? There has been, unfortunately, a terrible thing. We're not trying to make light of it, we're trying to make light of a terrible situation. But you have to kind of at least entertain the idea that these scouts, these Boy Scouts, are, hey, listen, we're going to tell home, going home to mom and dad what's happened. And he had to try to figure out a way to fix things.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's totally possible. And plausible, really. And I think that's the thing. You know, I think that's the reason, you know, this dude is convicted for murder and placed in an insane asylum, you know, right off the bat. And because just like us sitting here, I probably raised a whole lot of eyebrows, you know, pretty quickly. But I think what I would like to know is, okay, there's claims that this lady was a witch. All right. I would like to know the evidence behind what backs up these claims. You get what I'm saying? Was she just considered to be a witch? because she was an old recluse, or was there some sort of evidence going on of the surrounding people in the area that, you know, saw some rituals being done or saw some, you know, sacrifices made, or, you know, all these different things. I think that if we knew that for sure, I think that would be a little easier for me to go down the route of, okay, there were some kind of entities that were contacted here that maybe had some domain on the property. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in once these things are contacted and brought through, which I believe is totally, fully possible, I don't think they just go away unless they're forced away.
I concur.
So I would like to know that.
Yeah, and I can Google this and find the answer in 2 seconds. I'm just going to ask you all, Salem witch trials, what time frame was that? The 1860s? Is that
17?
Was it pre-1800?
Maybe 1760s.
Okay, maybe that's what it was. Yeah, it was Puritans, right? So it would have been, that makes more sense.
Yeah, but still, no, not 1760, earlier than that, between early 1692 and mid 1693.
Oh, so they just got over here then.
Yeah. But dude, witches, it's always been something that it's always been a hot topic. Always. Yeah. From the times of, you know, like early European, you know, they were witch hunting in Spain and in a lot of places in Europe for hundreds of years before the Salem witch trials happened, you know, over here in what is now the U.S., you know, the colonies at the time. There's always been witch trials. And even looking at witches, you know, in the majority of cases, I feel like that it was probably mass hysteria. I believe that it was a people group that was ran and ruled with an iron fist by the church. And the church at that time was no nonsense. Like, like Quakers and Puritans, you got a Quaker show up on Puritan land, we're going to punch a hole through your tongue. It was like turf wars.
Hatfields and McCoys.
Yeah, only it was Quakers and Puritans. God don't love you. He only loves me. And because
we make the better oats.
Yeah. And because he doesn't love you, I'm punching a hole through your tongue. And if you come back, I'm going to burn you right alongside them witches.
And I think, too, not to paint with a broad brush here, but I think this is just, put it in U.S. history, this is just the first of many instances in which religious people have tried to come up with a scapegoat to help explain things that were supernatural.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was just
for me, we could start at the Salem witch trials and just kind of move through, you know, 100 years per 100 years and find the next thing that religious people, the church, right, try to, you know, explain away things that they don't want to talk about and they don't like to, you know, have conversations about. And then they would slap a scarlet letter on whatever they wanted to slap a scarlet letter on and then call it a witch and burn it at the stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're the original cancel culture. I mean, seriously.
Only when you got canceled, you got really canceled. Permanently.
Yeah. Ask the Aztecs. Oh, wait. You can't.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, okay, you think about it. You know, we've done episodes and talked a lot about, you know, granny witching and Appalachian folk magic. Well, you think about if those things were being done in, say, Salem witch trials, 1692, 1693, you know, my mamaw probably would have been hanging on a stake somewhere. Or, which, here's a fun fact. Do you know they didn't burn any of those witches? You know,
right, it's just threw them in the water, right? See if they floated or not. So they
sometimes, or they would hang them. Or there was one case of, what was his name? It's not with me right now, but there was one case of an old man that was pressed to death. They just kept stacking these giant rocks or these large stones on top of his chest. And I'm thinking he was like 80 years old at the time. And the sheriff of the place would come up to him, poke him with his cane, prod at him, you know, just pick at him, ask him if he was going to confess. And every time, Thomas, I don't remember, but every time that the sheriff would ask him, you know, are you willing to confess? Are you willing to confess that you're a witch? He would just say, more weight. Yeah, that's hardcore right there, son.
Yeah.
That is hardcore.
That's the heaviest rock you've got.
So eventually he died. Yeah. So it was really hardcore what he said, but it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But no, just speaking of the Salem witch trials, you know, me and Connor, we actually went to Salem last year around Halloween. It was in like the last week of October, and just being there and seeing, you know, the museum and the, you know, the Salem Witch House and where these people, you know, actually lived, and seeing the old village style cottages, you know, the old village that's still there that you can go check out, you know, how they lived and all this different stuff, and going and checking out the memorial to the people that, you know, Sarah Good, Sarah Wild, you know, just some of these witches that were executed at that time. You know, and there's so many theories about what was really going on just with the Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
Like it's really interesting, man. Really is.
It's so funny to think that in those days you used like aloe vera plant to help with a burn, and you would get burnt at the stake for being a witch. And now we sell it by the gallons in Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was a what was that? Ergot. That's one of the theories. It's a, have you ever heard of Ergot?
Yes. It's that mold.
Yeah, it's a fungus.
It's the fungus among us, people.
Ergot is a...
Yeah.
It's a fungus.
They're just tripping balls.
Yeah, that's one of the theories. And actually, mm-hmm. It's one of the theories because of how the weather was that year. It was so cold, or however it worked out, but it was so cold and so like damp for the months leading up to that time that the stores of bread that they had, the stores of rye bread, they think had developed ergot, which is a fungus that forms, it forms like hallucinogens. Like you take that, and, you know, one of the theories is that these witches were actually just super stoned, were stoned out of their gourds off of this ergot. And
well, everybody was. Maybe they were seeing colors, and maybe they were getting different vibes from different people because of that.
Yeah, it's totally possible. That's what I'm saying. There's so many different theories. You know, it's everything from mass hysteria and just finger pointing. I mean, you pissed me off, so tomorrow, guess what? I had a dream, and you came and plagued me in my dream, and that made you a witch. Like, literally, that was some of these cases. Like, such and such, I saw such and such in my dream. They came and poked me or sat on me, and they're a witch. because they can travel astrally. They're a witch.
You came at me in my dreams, the Jezebel.
And you know, good meal too. There's some people running around just saying some stuff just to get see if they get called a witch or not.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
You know, good meal that was going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, look, here comes the constable and his wife. Let's just say something to him, see what happens.
Yeah.
Curse ye, constable, and your wench beside you. You know that was happening.
Well, you know, think about the times. If a woman spoke out on anything, if a woman was partially successful in any kind of way, if a man felt slighted in any way at all, I mean, it's
thou there was show us too much cleavage.
Yeah.
Witch.
I see ye ankle there, Sarah. The next
You're
time I'll be seeing
thoughts in my head.
The next time I'll be seeing
that butter, Sarah.
The next time I'll be seeing thy ankles, they'll be swinging from a tree.
Those guys had some pent up sexual shit going on. That was,
you know, good and well too. Like Jedediah came walking home to his wife. He's like, did you see the neighbor vigorously churning the butter this morning? And she was like, were you looking at Rachel in ways you shouldn't be? She's a witch, you know.
She seduced you. She used her seductress witch powers.
Both of her eyes while she was churning the butter. Did she give you one eye look?
Because they were only, sex was only for procreation, right? Just freaking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. With Puritans, definitely.
Puritans, sex was not for fun.
And it wasn't supposed to be pleasurable then. Like, you better not get any pleasure out of this. I'm just doing what I got to do. It's like milking
you
cows.
High school kids watching this video and this. Listen to this podcast. Just don't do it. Be like the Puritans.
Yeah.
Turn those witches into the principal. Don't let them get to you.
Abstinence is the best stance.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I mean, you know, look, we keep looking at Kate and like we're talking about all these theories and all these possibilities and it's, you know, making it sound like, oh, well, there's no such thing as witches. There definitely are witches. Like,
yes. There's actual witchcraft that happens. Yes.
For sure. Without a shadow of a doubt, there are witches. But I feel like in the majority of these gigantic witch hunts that have happened throughout history, probably not. Yeah. I mean, now look, you look at European culture. Like, especially, you know, throughout the Middle Ages up into, you know, this time, 16, 1700s, when people are migrating from Europe to North America. Yeah, they're bringing about some heritage and some things that are different than what a lot of people were cool with. And again, just like we said, you know, some of our grannies might have been right in the middle and labeled a witch for some of the things that they do. But when I think actual witchcraft, now don't get me wrong. I believe magic is real and I believe that magic is everywhere. And I believe that's around us every single day.
Ryan, before he goes on his diatribe.
Yeah.
How do you feel about witchcraft and magic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Meh.
It's come on, man. No.
Okay.
No what?
It's nothing. Witchcraft practiced by in a religious form by Wiccans and all that, that's their, I guess, a religion or just belief. I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's a religion.
It's okay. So that's fine. You know, they can do what they want. But as far as like casting spells and all that, I don't know.
Well, I think that we have this Hollywood version of a witch and what a witch is supposed to be, you know, waving a magic wand and hitting somebody with a ball of light, you know, Hadouken pulse right to the chest or whatever. Like, we have this Hollywood idea. I don't think that's what witches, what witchcraft is. I believe you look at the people that practice, you know, the occult, you know, and a lot of people that's literally what they're doing. You know, they're dabbling in and with magic. You know, whether
that's not really a Hollywood theme thing. It goes way further back. All the way, what is it? Boil, boil, toil and trouble. I think that's Shakespeare. Can't remember. Hamlet, maybe.
Sounds like William.
So you think Shakespeare just brought this out of nowhere? I'm saying
it's not No. That's what I'm saying. It goes further back than Hollywood giving us that type of image of a witch, you know, spells and cauldrons and, you know, black cats and riding brooms and all that. That came with, I can't remember where the black cat thing came from. I used to know. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know exactly
what you're saying. It's not a Hollywood thing. This goes back, you know, if that is Shakespeare, and I can't believe I can't remember what that is. But even way then, you know, way back then, they're talking about the same type of witchcraft and everything.
But that's what I'm saying. And again, like we talk about on here all the time, where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, Shakespeare had to get this from somewhere. I mean,
we discussed that today.
We did, but that was all about smell. What's the smell like? That was all about smell. Well, I mean, we know that there are practitioners of witchcraft. There are open practitioners of witchcraft that are out there.
And by the way, please don't curse me just because I don't believe the same way as you. And just because I don't believe it doesn't exist doesn't mean it doesn't. It, you know, doesn't mean that it does exist.
Okay, Ryan, let me ask you this.
Just don't curse me, damn it. I'm open-minded.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that sometimes when you speak certain things, they come into fruition in your reality?
Yes, because Google's listening.
I'm not talking about on your phone. I'm talking about in your reality, not on a screen.
I guess, yeah, it's happened a few times. I've told you it's really weird. Like, I've thought about certain things and then, or like a certain food, not even mention it to Ashley, but I'll get home and that's what we're having. I'm like, oh shit.
Well, that just that simple concept of manifestation into reality. You know, it's just like we talked last week. You know, everybody has their own like little personal reality. Well, these manifestations into reality is, you know, that's one of those principal parts of witchcraft, of practicing the occult. You know, and look, I'm not saying that, I would say that the vast majority of people that have these beliefs and practice these things don't do it for bad or for ill will. The majority of people that you see is just this new age kind of stuff that, you know, is all about nature and all about, you know, meditation and, you know, being one with the universe and manifesting your own things into reality that you can grow into fruition. And, you know, it's all about this self-reflection kind of thing. And it's really like free lovey, new agey, you know, that kind of thing. I'm talking the Aleister Crowleys, the Jack Parsons, the
the witches opening portals and shit.
The L. Ron Hubbards. You know, these people are using spells and sex magic and rituals and all of these different things, like, and things happened. So I believe when you look at magic, it's not so much as, you know, double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, and, you know, these green women with big noses with warts on them, and their black cats running around while they're got their cauldron and they're trying to lure in children and suck their souls out, you know, all hocus pocusy. But I believe there's a lot of people out there that do use ritual and manifestation and spells. And when I say spells, that's just repetition of intent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the greatest witches of our time, Bruce Lee, said, don't ever speak. You notice one of the greatest witches of our time, Bruce Lee. You like that, Lance? Did you like it?
I got it.
He said, never talk negatively about yourself because your body doesn't know that you're kidding. And everything that you say and speak has power and has influence on the physical surroundings. If it didn't, why would they call it spelling?
Well, Confucius say, man who fart in church sit in no pew. So you have that.
I'm just saying, I'll never sit here and claim to know like a ton about this stuff because I don't. I would love to get, you know, somebody who actually practices whatever you want to call it, you know, practices magic or witchcraft or like, I'd love to get somebody on here and talk to them about it just to, you know, find out what they do, how they go about it, you know, how they view, you know, certain things. And I don't know a ton. I think it's one of those, you know, life experience, shared experience kind of things. Like, yeah, you know what you read and you know what you hear, but like, I know that in our area, in central Appalachia, there's all kinds of covens of witches out there. But what are they doing? I don't know. Where are they meeting? I don't know. Are they sitting in a circle, in a calming circle, in a beautiful meadow filled with dandelions somewhere, just loving each other and looking at each other in the face and saying, you're beautiful, you're awesome, you're going to do great things? Or are they out in the middle of the woods sacrificing goats and wearing their heads around and, you know, trying to conjure up Lucifer? I don't know.
Hey, by the way, if we have any listeners that practice any of this, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah, come on here and school us.
Educate us.
Absolutely.
So we don't say stupid things.
Well, we're going to say stupid things. Yeah. That's a given.
We'll try not to say stupid things.
I'm just saying, I'm a full believer in, and we took a, which is what we do, but we've went a long way from Dunlora Plantation. But oh, I'm a firm believer in magic. I am. I believe I that. Always,
sorry,
go ahead. No, you're good, Lance. You're good. Go.
I always, when these types of conversations come up, right? I think that personally, 95% of the witches, occultism, people practicing magic, sorcery, so on and so forth, I think 95% of it is just 100% just garbage.
Well,
but
at least you didn't shit on their religion or nothing.
But I think that 5% of it is true. And I always go back to the instance in 1 Samuel in which King Saul goes to the witch of Endor, and she uses a talisman, essentially a token, to talk to who Saul thinks is the dead prophet Samuel. Now, we can go into a whole spiritual debate on, did she actually summon him? Did God allow this? Whatever. That's irrelevant. That's not what we're talking about. But this was a woman that was known in 700 BC, whenever that was, right? She was a witch of Endor. She was a medium. King Saul knew that. Covered up his head, obviously. He didn't want people to see it, but went to her for this specific purpose. Like, and you can read, we read in scriptures where there was something that was manifested. Okay. Again, we won't get into the theological discussion of what that was, but there was something that took place, right? So there has to be at least a shroud of legitimacy in the idea of witchcraft, because, of course, we know scripture goes on to essentially call this sin of witchcraft a really bad thing. So while I think that 95% of it is crap, sorry, if you are a practicing Wiccan out there, you are listening to this and you're a member of the Hill Folk, we love you. I love you. I'm not trying to crap on what you believe in. But if you are practicing Wiccan, then you pretty much think what I believe is crap anyway. Right? I mean, that's kind of, and that's okay. We can coexist that way. But I think there's a shroud of legitimacy in it, because there are legitimate points in history in which you have seen these people, witches, whatever you want to call them, be able to actually manifest. Now, demons, which cloaking as whatever these things were, again, all beside the point, there are things that have actually are able to happen. Okay. I think because of these moments, right, and they're like, just like anything else, everything else been blown up from it. They can point back to which vendor, they can point back to these other instances, and then it becomes a whole thing, becomes a bit taboo, becomes a bit counter culture to kind of act like these things, and then we try to normalize these things, so on and so forth. We won't dive down that rabbit hole. But I think there's at least a portion of that that is legitimate because of these instances that you can see through history.
So do you believe in magic?
Do you believe in magic?
Sorry, I knew that was coming.
Do I believe in magic? I do not believe in Expelliarmus, Lucio, whatever, Harry Potter spells. No. Do I believe in witches being able to chant spells to curse people? No. I believe that people are trying to use magic as a token word to help explain some of the supernatural things that take place in the world, and trying to conjure those things as well.
Well, even if you look farther back,
I danced around that answer, didn't I, Ryan?
You did.
I professionally danced around that answer.
You danced around that like a politician.
That was super political. That was kind of impressive, actually.
It was.
Well, if you look even farther back, if we're talking like scripture and you know, early writings, if you look even farther back, you know, if you take, you know, if you look at First Enoch, you know, and it talks about the watchers coming down and sharing knowledge, one of the things they share right off the bat is sorcery. Right off the bat. Lance, you're scaring me a little bit.
Book of Enoch is fake. Joel about it. He'll tell you.
What? Oh, no. That's right.
I think
Lance doesn't believe in the Book of Enoch, right?
Nope, not true. I think it's, oh, I believe in it. I think it was written by who we think it was written by.
Well, even if it wasn't, and even if Joel is completely correct in everything that he's talking about, which we've also been in contact, just so you know. You know, even he'll say, and I believe, you know, there's a large portion of it that's still probably true. Like, if you're using it in the way that he says that it was used, you know, for deceptive purposes,
I agree with that.
You still have to make the majority of it look really good.
Absolutely. I was just being a dickhead. Yeah,
I know. You guys are getting real contrarian as this thing goes along.
What are you talking about, Justin? I've been nothing but helpful.
I accept all things.
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you guys.
Tell you what I think about them. This is the whole purpose of this.
Yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
Trying really, really hard to pay attention. But sometimes I'm zoning out on you guys.
I would have no idea why, Mr. 500 milligrams.
Yeah. Let's see if I can get around. Just look at the screen for a second. Don't do anything. Just look at the screen. Am I close, Justin? Am I close?
Pretty close. That's maybe a
little. Well, I have to look down to look at you. You're right. You're that's the true. Bottom.
I'm sorry. That was really messed with you, didn't it? I apologize.
All right. So we took this whole big route into, you know, witchcraft and the entire history of it. That was a nice little fun route.
You're welcome, Hillfolk.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Hillfolk.
So.
And again, if there is anybody out there, no joke, if there is anybody out there that is a practitioner of the occult, you know, practicing witch, I don't know if warlock is used as a word anymore for man. I don't know. See,
I don't know either. Right? That's a good question.
We're totally clueless.
The answers, listen, exactly. Yeah. These are the answers that we need.
Yeah, yeah, we're totally.
This is what we need to educate it on.
We're totally clueless about this. So if you are practicing with these things and come on here and educate us and let us know how it goes. Because
please come on and change my mind. I will 100% tune in and listen, and I'll have questions. But like if you give me an idea or give me a reasonable explanation that is better than what I've got, listen. I mean, I'll be all in on what you're practicing.
Yeah,
that's 100% true. Like, I mean, I need somebody to kind of help maybe open my eyes, clear the veil or whatever it is, or just explain things to me better. Maybe I have a very closed-minded view of what goes on. I want you to come on and call me an idiot and tell me why I'm an idiot. Listen, I'll take it. Gladly. Well,
again, and like I said, you know, I feel like the vast majority out there don't practice in any kind of ill fashion or any kind of, you know, ill intent toward anybody else. There's only the select few that, again, that we read about and hear about that, you know, like your Crowleys that create their own religion of Thelema and start doing all this crazy sex magic and having all these scarlet women that are literally representing the whore of Babylon and, you know, trying to bring the Antichrist into the world.
Not good.
I mean, all that stuff, like that's all legit stuff. And he was trying really, really, really hard.
This escalated quickly. Well, we were talking about Wiccans, then got into Jezebels and
I'm just saying, I'm not trying to put a brand on the entire group as a whole. You know, we talk about that all the time on here. I think that's one of the worst things that you can do is to get this point of view about something in particular or a particular group and label them all, you know, Satanists. They're all Satanists. They're all out there in the woods worshiping Satan and blah, blah. The majority of them, I'm sure, don't even believe in Satan.
Absolutely. We're all just trying to figure this thing out, this thing called life out. We're all just trying to figure it out. Like, but I don't think some things are real, and I think some things are real, but Ryan thinks the things that I don't think are real, real, and I don't think the things that he thinks are real, real. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, it's...
You're really welcome
for that.
And you know what's even better is we can title the episode Whiz Biz.
I don't even know what that means.
You never watched Adventure Time? Ice King had to go take care of Whiz Biz.
Yeah. That is right. Yep.
I know I'm too old for that cartoon, but I still loved it. My son and I watched it all the time.
It's okay. It's okay. But no, I mean, I think it's a really interesting subject. It's an interesting topic, just witches and witchcraft, you know, the occult, all that in general.
And just we've said this before, like where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
Things have gone, you know, maybe a little more out there than first intended, but there is at least a basis of it, a foundation.
Yeah, these practices started somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So where does this stem from? That's what I want to get educated on.
Well, I mean, we know for a fact, we did an entire episode on Appalachian folk magic and granny witching. I mean, we know for a fact that you have people out there that can buy warts and take burns away and, get rid of thrush and, yeah. I mean, so
seventh son of a seventh son.
So, I mean, you have all the accounts around here. That's regardless of what you want to call it, what name you would want to put on it, it's witchcraft. Literally. Yeah. It's a form of magic. I mean, that's just, whether it's herb healing, even reciting some of the Psalms. Is that not a spell? Would that not be a spell?
Yeah, you could definitely consider it a spell. I mean, I'm sure some people do.
I mean, that's what a spell is. It's an incantation repeatedly of something with a certain intent behind it to create a desired effect or to have a desire. So, yeah, I mean, I've seen it growing up, or at least a portion of what's out there. And I'm coming to find in my own life that certain things just happen. It almost like you speak certain things into existence. So I don't know what you would consider that. I don't know what that really is. I don't know if that's just
that kind of go back to the power of life and death. Is that the tip of the tongue?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. Somebody come on and educate us, because we probably sound really stupid this entire, like, if you do practice out there, you're listening to this right now, or even if you're knowledgeable, if you're knowledgeable in this, you're probably sitting out there right now thinking, these guys are ridiculous.
Don't come at us with any of this. My girlfriend's sister's cousin was a practitioner, so I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we don't want that. And realistically, we could probably do that ourselves.
Yeah.
We sit down and thought about it for a second.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really interested in it. I actually told Monica a while back, because we were sitting, at a restaurant in Abingdon, and they had a draft from Asheville called the Green Man. And I was like, huh, I know the Green Man. I know what that is. So then I start telling her all about the Green Man and, you know, Pan and witchery and how Asheville is really new agey and, you know, all this different stuff. Like, she was totally not interested in anything, but I was just going on.
Same way my wife would be if we'd had that same conversation.
Yeah. I was going on and on and on about it. And then I came to the realization, because I was giddy, like I was talking about it, and I was giddy. And I came to the realization really quickly. And I told her, I said, you know what? It's a good thing that I'm as strong in my faith as I am. And that's the hill that I'll always die on, because I could probably get witchy real quick.
If I knew Ashley wouldn't leave me over it, I'd head off to Hogwarts tomorrow and learn all about this shit. But
Eliamus.
The Depot, or what's it called? The train, the
nine and three quarters.
Nine and three quarters.
Come on.
Quarters. Come on, Justin. I know, but I forgot what it was called, what that's actually. Anyway, back to Dunlore Plantation.
Oh, yeah.
Back to that, and we'll kind of, we'll wrap it up here. That's what started this whole tangent conversation.
Yeah.
I would like to know what evidence they had, or if any, of calling this lady a witch, or if it's just a bunch of myth and folklore and legend that surrounds this creepy giant farmhouse that belongs. But this dude was also the brother-in-law of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson was into a whole lot of stuff. I mean, he was sending people out looking for giants in mounds early on. So I'm just saying.
Did you tell us that he was Thomas Jefferson's what?
Brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law.
The first owner.
Did you tell us that early on?
Yep, sure did.
Yeah.
I just missed that. Sorry.
Yeah, well. So
how old was... Wait. That was 17 what? 30?
Right, I don't remember now.
Let's see.
1920, wasn't it?
That was when the murders happened. Yeah.
That was when the murders happened.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, this guy was 477 years old.
And we're talking about when they declared this woman a witch.
Well, no, she was declared a witch back in her time. What this guy was claiming was that it was the spirit of this witch.
Yeah, sure.
That done the murder.
So the guy telling the story is supposed to be Jefferson's brother-in-law.
No, not at all. Okay. Not even close.
The scoutmaster was Jefferson's brother-in-law.
No, not at all.
One of the scouts that died.
So Jefferson's brother-in-law owned the property?
Originally, yes. Originally.
And the woman that was
1730 something?
That was Jefferson's sister?
No. Holy crap. Y'all go back and read this.
Wait a minute.
I'm just messing.
I'm trying to do math here. 1730 something.
There's no math to be done.
Yes, there is.
Nobody was claiming
Jefferson's brother-in-law.
Oh, good Lord.
Owns property. How old is Jefferson's sister? Because 1776, 40 years later, is the Revolution. Then you have Washington as president.
Oh, Ron.
So Thomas Jefferson's sister was this guy's wife.
Yeah.
The land was originally acquired in 1724 by a Major Thomas Carr, better known as the brother-in-law of Thomas Jefferson himself.
Okay. 1724. That makes more sense.
Yes. For unspecified services to the crown, after which the sprawling house called Dunlora Mansion was erected in 1730. So, yeah, that's still feasible.
Okay.
But, yeah, they don't believe. Which, I mean, if she's a witch, like a legit witch, who knows? Maybe she did live to be 300 years old or 200, whatever. I don't know. We just said, Brian, we don't know how all this stuff works. Maybe they live forever. Maybe they're immortal.
Maybe. Adrenochrome.
Yeah. Hillary's a witch. But anyway, back to this. If there was some form of actual stuff going on, and now don't get me wrong, I believe the average Joe can contact an entity, but if she's out there and she's actually doing these things and there's a whole lot going on, then yeah, maybe it's all a possibility. Maybe the spirit of some old crazy witch that was just hell bent on splitting open kids and dragging their entrails around. Maybe it was still around. I mean, the Blair Witch Project came from somewhere, right?
Yeah, it was that guy's imagination.
Nah. Imaginations don't exist. They're not real. They're like dinosaurs.
Not according to SpongeBob.
All right, boys. So, final thoughts.
Thomas Jefferson's.
Good Lord. Let's just forget about that part completely.
One of his illegitimate children.
It's got to be your bull.
Is the witch, in turn, that possessed this guy to kill all these people.
Let's just imagine that Thomas Jefferson owned all of Charlottesville and that everybody that lived there was kinfolk somehow or slaves. So they were all one big giant patriarchal family with Thomas Jefferson at the top, and everything that happened stemmed from Jefferson. Let's take that route.
So it was a cult.
Brother.
Probably. This nation was founded on a cult.
Jesus.
I think this nation might have been founded on the occult. I'm still digging into a lot of that.
I think it was on mushrooms.
We know. All right, guys. Let's get out of here. Hill folk, again. Sorry that
we were shooting from the hip.
We were totally shooting from the hip, and this was just straight conversation. This was raw.
Unscripted.
But we hope you enjoyed it. Ryan, Lance, love you, boys.
Love you and mean it.
Love you guys.
Hill folk, we love y'all. Remember, subscribe to our YouTube. Please go leave those 5-star ratings and reviews wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on all of our socials. They will be listed in the show notes. Patreon should be up and going here in the next. Well, it should be going by the time you hear this episode. So jump on there and check out our Patreon. See what we got to offer. Happy Thanksgiving. This will be a couple days after Thanksgiving when y'all hear this one. So we hope that you had a great Thanksgiving. We hope that you ate so much. You got really miserable and you had all full intentions of watching football on the couch, but you sleep through all 3 games because the tryptophan hits like a mother.
And you spend all day Friday in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing.
Man, send us, I gotta do a roof.
Send us your stories, guys. Send us your stories. AppalachianIntelligence@gmail.com. Most importantly, more than anything, share the show. Share it around. Tell your mamas, tell your daddies, tell your brothers, tell your sisters, tell your cousins, tell all your kinfolk.
Don't hide any of them. Just tell them.
No. Yeah. Uh-uh. Tell them. Just tell them. So these boys at Appalachian Intelligence are stupid, but they are stupid funny sometimes. And if you want to check them out on YouTube, they're extremely good looking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've been known as paranormal eye candy. I mean, self-proclaimed.
Have to give the people what they want.
Yeah. Hill folk, until next time. We'll see y'all later.